You're listening to Privacy and Security Insights, brought to you by Picasso.
Hello, and welcome to Picasso's podcast series. I'm Steve Wright, advisory board member of Picasso, and I am delighted to be joined here today by Jenna Franklin, a partner in the Data Privacy and Cybersecurity and AI practice at Stevenson Harwood. Jenna advises on data, privacy, cybersecurity, and emerging technologies, is co-chair of the Data Protection Finance Group, and has recently been appointed to the advisory board of Picasso. So welcome, Jenna.
Thank you, Steve. Very nice to be with you.
Thank you so much for your interesting article. Our listeners here today have already read the article and then clicked through to listen to this podcast. So it's on AI regulation, governance, and data privacy implications. Now, that is such a timely subject. So I'm pretty sure thousands of you will be listening today to this podcast. And so without further ado, I'm going to launch straight into it. So the first question, Jenna, thank you for your paper. It's really good. The first question is, how is AI regulation evolving internationally?
It's a really interesting topic, and it's happening at such fast pace. It's almost happening as quick as the technology is evolving as well. The legislation is desperately trying to keep up and keep a pace with the technological developments. I've been keeping a watchful eye on this for quite some time, Steve. It's interesting how different countries are approaching the governance and regulation of artificial intelligence from both deployment, production, and use of AI. And it's fascinating to see how the approaches vary quite considerably. So I suppose if you had to put it into two camps, you've got the hard regulation approach more binary regulation approach, whereby countries like the EU with the forthcoming EU AI Act, Canada, for example, Brazil and other countries are adopting, and China certainly adopting, a very kind of prescriptive approach towards the regulation of AI. Whereas in complete contrast, you have other jurisdictions like the UK, the US, Japan, looking to be more flexible, affording more flexibility in terms of trying to regulate emerging technology that is artificial intelligence, generative AI, and adopting more of a principles-based approach, like we have been closely watching within the UK and how that's evolving from a legislative perspective. We've got different approaches even within the UK. So with the UK Private Members Bill on AI coming through and second reading in the House of Lords on the 22nd of this month, and principles-based approach that came out in the AI white paper only last year in 2023. So they're very different approaches being taken from different jurisdictions. And it's interesting to see, it's almost like an arms race as to who is going to be the first in this arms race to regulating artificial intelligence. And do you want to be seen to be prescriptive and the benchmark, or do you want to be seen as perhaps being more pro-innovative in your approach to regulation? But what's most interesting, and I certainly look to when I speak to clients, is looking at OECD and their principles-based approach, and the G7 ministers, data and tech ministers, when they met last September and adopting the AI process principles. I think those give some very good foundational principles, such as having robust security measures in place, having appropriate use, having appropriate data sharing measures in place, for example. Those are the principles-based approach that actually I think could harmonize in an ideal world the approach to regulating AI on a global scale.
Thank you. That was a very comprehensive answer. And I had questions that I wanted to ask in between there, but I didn't want to break your flow. So that was really insightful. Thank you. I was going to be cheeky and ask kind of whether you felt the principle-based approach or the more sort of binary legislative approach, you know, is kind of a better, or is it too early to say?
I'm going to be a lawyer and say it depends. I think there's advantages and disadvantages to both approaches being taken. So where you have a more prescriptive approach that's being subscribed, just like the EU AI Act, in the forthcoming EU AI Act, I should say, where it's quite prescriptive in terms of defined enforcement measures that are going to be put in place. I think that probably is an enhancement in the sense of setting the bar and setting the standard, and it's a benchmark, a little bit like we looked at GDPR previously and thought this is a global standard and a global benchmark. So I think from that perspective, it's really helpful and useful. Because it's so prescriptive, it's easier for organisations to kind of measure their risk, if you like, of deploying AI within their own organisation. The challenge that we have and what we saw in the final text, or leading to the final text in December, was between certain jurisdictions that wanted to include large language models and those that didn't. And so it's like, is it in the regulation? Is it outside the regulation? I think that's the challenge with having something so prescriptive. You're always going to be constantly amending and updating to keep ahead of, or to certainly try and keep up with, technology as it evolves so quickly. And that's where I think, from a personal view, I think that the principles-based approach is probably a more sensible approach, provided that there's enough flesh, if you like, in terms of what we mean when we talk about certain principles, like, you know, like, for example, robust security controls. What does that actually mean? What does that what does that translate to? So I think it's going to be a kind of test and kind of testing environment, if you like, to understand where that sits on that scale. But generally speaking, I think the principles-based approach is probably the way forward to regulating technology.
Thank you, because that was on the spot there, a little bit of a teasy question there. But can you just, for the listeners, we, as you're on the board, over 10,000 podcasts downloaded and listened to by our wonderful members, 13,000 of them. So what could you just tell our listeners what the kind of core differences in that approach between the UK or and EU, or is that what you're saying? Are we, you know, are we taking more of a this binary or non-binary approach? But could you just elaborate on that a little bit for our listeners, please?
Sure. So as I touched on, the EU AI Act, which is will be implemented soon, but won't take effect probably until 2026. There's also the EU AI Liability Directive, but also within each member state, there's a national data strategy, and that's in varying degrees of granularity as well. So certain jurisdictions are more high level in terms of what their approach is to the governance and the regulation of artificial intelligence within their jurisdiction, and others are far more detailed. For example, Italy's is very detailed in terms of its approach to regulating AI. So you have the AI Act, and then within that you've got each national data strategy within each member state. The UK's approach is different. As I touched on the white paper from last year, they've established the Centre for Data Ethics and Innovation. They've built the Foundational Model Task Force and invested 100 million in that effort. There's also the Global Summit for AI Safety that was launched last November, which followed the Bletchley Declaration. And there's with that, there's also the government's response now to the proposed approach with the white paper and the government's response to that that came out earlier this month. And then they've established the AI Standards Hub as well. So it's very different. And I touched on the private members bill that's going through the House of Lords that Lord Holmes is advocating for at the moment. So, and that received its second reading. So very different approaches, even within the UK, as to how to effectively regulate artificial intelligence. But the two are very different approaches. So one where you've got a very binary and the other where it's very, certainly very non-binary. That's not to say that there won't be legislation in the future, but I think it's a watch and tell and see how it evolves and how the enforcement plays out from an EU standpoint as well will be interesting to see. We've already seen AI enforcement with ChatGPT in Italy from an EU perspective, where OpenAI was challenged on a number of grounds, including lawful basis for processing and transparency issues, as well as other conditions as well that they had to rectify before it could be released into the open market again in Italy. And then obviously with the Clearview AI case that's ongoing in the UK, you're seeing enforcement being tested, I suppose AI use and deployment being tested and enforcement activity being brought and challenged against its use.
Thank you, because that really nicely ties us, or tees me up for this next question, which is, given all those developments, given those different, slightly different approaches to this topic, what are the key or what advice would you be giving our listeners and your clients in terms of AI governance, which is a kind of umbrella term, really? But, you know, what would you be saying if you were talking to a client now today?
So we do advise our clients on AI governance programs, and I feel very fortunate and privileged to be able to do that because I see very different approaches being taken. And that's largely down to the culture of the organization, the size of the organization, mm-hmm. the risk appetite within that organization, and also, I suppose, the willingness or the desirability to utilize technology such as AI, and whether or not there's a nervousness or a fear factor, because I often see that within certain organizations where they'll have issued a blanket ban on AI across the organization, or the CISO has decided that they're not using AI full stop. So there's either senior management individually making that decision, or it's a corporate decision that's made. And I think that's partly down to the fear of the unknown, and it's working through what AI is actually in use within your organization. So I think the first step I would be taking, if I was looking at this from an organizational perspective, is to assess what AI is currently in use. So building out your AI asset register to understand from a development perspective, production perspective, deploying it or just using it, if you're buying it in or if you're building it yourself. So really understanding what's going on within your own organization. And then I think you need to put some policies and procedures around that in terms of what would be appropriate use, what would be non-appropriate use, what would be prohibited versus not prohibited. Often I say to organizations that you should have an amnesty. So there'll always be shadow AI in use in varying places. And when you've built the policy and procedure and process around what effectively you need to go through, the steps you need to go through to use AI tools, it's important to have an amnesty period where individuals are effectively confessing, for want of a better word, of what's actually going on and what they're using, that perhaps they should go through the formal process so you can manage the risk effectively. But I look to this in a similar way, Steve, as I look to GDPR, and I think it's a really good foundation, particularly for us as privacy professionals. When we look at the accountability wheel under GDPR, I often refer to that again as the kind of the cornerstone of how you effectively manage AI compliance and risk. So looking at carrying out risk assessments, ensuring that you've carried out your data protection impact assessment or human rights impact assessment, as often they're referred to now, to make sure that the data is accurate, it's not any bias, there's no discrimination or harm to users, for example. And then once you've done the risk assessment, looking again at your policies and procedures. So we're being asked by clients at the moment to develop policies and procedures on use of AI within organizations. And that's both buying in tooling, but also for either future-proofing for them to develop their own AI, or indeed, existential development in-house. Then from a transparency perspective, it's understanding how, and this gets confusing from a privacy perspective, because transparency in the context of understanding how an AI system makes decisions and when they produce specific results and what data the systems are using. But then there's a wider meaning of transparency under privacy law, as we know. So it's not to get the two confused and conflated about, being clear in your privacy notices about how the data is being used, the purpose for it being used, etc. I think one of the largest and most important pieces is training and awareness when you're developing your governance model, because it's getting the buy-in, particularly from all staff. If all staff aren't bought into the fact that it could create more efficiencies rather than the risk of them losing their roles, it's actually to build in more efficiencies and to enhance their role and to support them in their role. Admittedly, there will be some job losses and time in the near future as a result for more administrative type functions. But I think getting that training and awareness piece to all staff and getting them bought into the benefits of using AI is crucial for it to actually be deployed effectively. But it's also senior management understanding as well. That's really critical, so that they're not kind of in fear of it, in fear of the unknown. And there's a few more factors around monitoring, verification, response and enforcement. Yeah. So knowing exactly what administrative fines for non-compliance looks like, and you might, if you're in multiple jurisdictions, it's important to set that benchmark and feed into a benchmark of all different AI or potential AI regulation that's up and coming, and make sure you have a standard so that you're meeting compliance across all the jurisdictions that you're operating in. And then finally, it's leadership and oversight. So really, this kind of comes down to who's making the decision in terms of what AI is being used within the organization. What forum are you going through setting up an appropriate governance board? Who are the participants of that governance board, for example? Do they have the right skill set? Do they have the right expertise? Do they understand the technology? All of those factors that need to be taken into consideration when you're putting a governance. And if you're in a wider organization, then building that into your existential data governance framework or your enterprise risk management framework, this should be part of that. It should be intrinsic as part of that overall risk management framework.
Love it. Thank you. That was really great. Do you know what? I could listen to you for hours, but sadly, we've lost time. We've run out of time. We haven't lost it. It's still here. But we have run out of time, would you believe? It goes so quickly. And it's such a privilege to interview people like yourself and listen and learn. And so I was jotting down notes. So I hope our listeners were as well. Just sort of as a gift, is there any kind of, I mean, there were so many pearls of wisdom in there, but are any kind of like, what would you say are the top three things? Like if you do nothing at all and you've got this happening, or you suspect it's happening in your business, in your organization, what would be those couple of things, Jenna, that you would advise? You know, you say, oh, you must always look before you cross the road, which is what we tell our kids. But, you know, what's the
I think getting a policy together that goes to all staff about what AI is, what an AI system is, you know, educate them on artificial intelligence, because a lot of it gets very confusing as well between machine learning and existential machine learning, and people get confused as to what AI is, generative AI. So I think it's the education piece and maybe some kind of video as well as accompanying a policy is the best place, because people know what they can and can't do. So that's the starting point. I think also, as I mentioned, the asset register is really critical, because without that, you don't know what your risks are. You don't know what your exposure is. So putting that together, carrying out the amnesty, I know people laugh at me when I talk about shadow AI, but I think that's really important, again, to be able to manage your risk effectively. And then thirdly, I think it comes down to the board and the composition and your process. Yeah. In approving and making the decision making around what AI tools. But most important, I think it's not getting overwhelmed as an organization about AI. I think it's just looking at each tool for each business purpose. So being really clear about what is the business need and where can I find the right tooling for that, rather than we need to, you know, people kind of panic about, well, we need to be doing AI and we need, it's just really important to think, well, what is the business need for this in the first place? And can it be enhanced by use of an AI tool is the question, but that's the preliminary question.
That's fantastic. Thank you, Jenna Franklin, partner at Stevenson Harwood. That's all we have time for today in this podcast episode. I'm Steve Wright, signing off. Thank you for joining us today. Thank you, Jenna, once again for that insightful topic, and look forward to speaking to you soon, listeners, at our next episode here from Picasso. Thanks and goodbye.